to work with our cutting edge video system here. We need a new video system. I love the collection of texts today, so I want to talk about three of them, starting out with Ezekiel. We hardly read anything from Ezekiel, and it's one of the biggest books in the Bible, except for this passage, right? But we read it out of context, and the context is, I mean, this passage was written 600 years before Jesus lived, right? Or it was 600 years before Christianity is when this passage gets written. And it's written when the children of Israel, the southern tribe of Israel, there's been King Nebuchadnezzar from Babylon has come in and has destroyed the temple and has ransacked Jerusalem and has taken the people of the people of Israel captive and brought them all the way to Babylon. And so there's huge disruption in their lives, right? Their lives are destroyed. Their hopes are destroyed. Their sense of themselves are destroyed. Now they're in captivity. Now there's a sense of they're in slavery again. These people for whom God desires freedom, and now they're in slavery. And they have a sense of despair, right? They feel hopeless. They feel like God has abandoned them, like God has failed. They feel like there's no hope. Right, and so they say this phrase, "Our bones are dried up." And I was struck by that phrase. You know, bones are a living thing. Bones are full of, like, they're alive. Right, our bones are alive in our bodies, and when a bone is dried up, it's dead. Right, so they're saying, at the core of our very being, we feel dead. That's what they're saying. Right, they're alive, but they feel dead and they feel hopeless. And so the Spirit of God says to Ezekiel, and the passage opens with the Spirit, he says, you know, like the Spirit of God came upon, his hand was upon me, and he took me to this other place. There's a sense where he's taken to see a vision. It's what it is it's a vision. God gives Ezekiel a vision for this time, for this people, for this occasion. And so I want to show a video of that vision, if we can make it all work. Let's do that.
The hand of the Lord was upon me. He brought me out by the Spirit of the Lord and set me in the middle of a valley. It was full of bones. He led me back and forth among them, and I saw a great many bones on the floor of the valley. He asked me, "Son of man, can these bones live?" I said, "O sovereign Lord, you alone know." Then he said to me, "Prophesy to these bones and say to them, 'Dry bones, hear the voice of the Lord. I will bring breath into you, and you will come to life.'
What'd you think? I'm asking. Yeah, how did that hit you? What'd you see?
Intense.
Intense. Okay, yeah, it is. It is pretty intense, isn't it? It's quite striking, all the tendons growing on top of it. Freaks some people out. Sorry about that. Anybody else? Well, it is, like, there is a reminiscence of a zombie movie, right? I mean, there's... Yeah, I mean, we get a lot of that. And then, I mean, it's curious because some of the... and yet, it's really clear from the vision, like, that it's clear in the context that this is a vision. Right? You have said your bones are dried up. You feel like a skeleton, is what the children of Israel are saying. They're alive. They're not dead. This isn't a text about zombies. But you have felt dead. And so, you know, the Spirit of God says, okay, prophesy to these bones. Oh, son of man, oh, mortal, prophesy to these bones. And the bones come together, right? But then they don't have breath. They come together, but they don't have breath. And the word for breath in Hebrew is spirit or ruah. So breath, spirit, the wind, it's all the same thing. You don't have breath, you don't have spirit, you don't have the Spirit of God. And so, you know, God says, oh mortal, prophesy to these bones, prophesy to the breath, prophesy to the wind, right? And they come together in one vast multitude, and that's where this ends, with, you know, the guy standing there. And then Ezekiel continues, then God said to me, mortal, these bones are the whole house of Israel. They say our bones are dried up, our hope is lost, we are cut off completely. Therefore prophesy and say to them, thus says the Lord God, I am going to open your graves. I am going to bring you up from your graves, O my people. I will bring you back into the land of Israel. And you shall know that I am the Lord when I open your graves and bring you up from your graves, O my people. I will put my spirit within you, and you shall live. I shall place you on your own soil, and you shall know that I am the Lord. I have spoken, and I will act. But it's really clear that this isn't a zombie text. It's not about raising corpses from the dead, but it is about giving life to those who feel like they're dead. It is about resurrecting the living dead, if you will. It is about bringing the, you know, in that sense, it is about resurrecting the living dead. This is 600 years before Christianity. 600 years before Jesus. It's an integral part of the Jewish faith. That God takes death and makes it, and reworks it and creates something new out of it and makes it life. That's a fundamental sense of the character of God. It's a statement about the character of God. We read in our psalm. Our psalm begins, out of the depths I have called to you, O Lord. O Lord, hear my voice. It too is a place that begins in despair. Out of the depth of my pain I am calling. This is a song of lament. Let my voice hear me. Lord, hear my voice, hear my supplication. And it's born out of a sense that God does that. God enters into those places of despair and brings about life. So it's in that context that we have today's gospel reading, right? That's the kind of background for the gospel reading. And a lot of folks, you know, there are people who focus on this story and they're like, okay, there's a guy that gets raised from the dead at the end of the story and he comes out and he's all bound up and he looks like a mummy, you know, and is this another one of those zombie texts in the Bible? You know, is that a real story? Is that a made-up story? Maybe he wasn't really dead. Maybe he was in a coma, you know, for 4 days and Jesus rolled away the stone and it just happened to wake him up and, you know, was this a miracle? I don't know if I believe in miracles. I mean, a lot of people do lots of things with this story, right? And I think to that focus misses the point. I mean, we're so focused on, okay, we're focused on that we miss the story, quite honestly. And I think we miss the truth in the story. Because it starts out, there was a certain man who was ill. There was a man who was sick. And he was a friend of Jesus. And he had two daughters who were also Jesus' friends, right? Or I guess their sisters. Sorry, their sisters. And Jesus gets word that this family is in trouble, that his friend Lazarus is suffering, that his friend Lazarus is near death. And Jesus does this weird thing of, like, he doesn't get up and go. He kind of says, He says, this illness does not lead to death, is what he says. And so he kind of sits there for another 2 days, which is an odd thing to be doing. And then he says to his disciples, well, let us go up, let's go back up and let's go to Judea again. And he had just left Judea because they had tried to kill him. They had tried to stone him in Judea. And so You know, at this point, now he's going to go back down there, and his disciples are like, whoa, they just were trying to kill you. Is this a good thing to do? And Thomas is the one, well, let's go with him, because, you know, if he dies, we'll die with him. And he says, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep. That's the metaphor he uses. He's fallen asleep. We need to go wake him. We need to go wake him up. And so then they go, and when they arrive at Bethany, they find out that Lazarus has been dead for 4 days. And because of his tearing and because of the amount of time it took to get there, Lazarus has been dead for 4 days. And as he approaches their house, Martha comes running to him. One of the sisters, she comes running to him. And the first thing she says is, Lord, if you had been here, he would not have died. And you can hear her anger in her voice. You've let us down. If you had been here, he wouldn't have died. Why were you so late? But she says, yeah, I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him. And Jesus says, your brother will rise again. And Martha says, well, yeah, I know. You give me all this stuff about, yeah, I know he's going to rise on the last day. You know, I've heard all that stuff about heaven. I know that. And Jesus says to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. And he says, do you believe this? And he's not asking, do you believe that I can raise bodies from the dead? Do you believe that I can do that? That I can make a... That's not what he's saying. He says, do you believe... Because he's talking about, do you believe that there is this life that even though you may die, you will live? And even if you're living... And once you live, you're never going to die, right? He's like, do you believe that there is a life that is deeper than death? Do you believe that life is stronger than death? Do you believe that God, who is the giver of all good things, who gives life, really does give life and has the power over death? And he's not saying, if you believe in me, you're never going to die and you're going to live, you know, on this earth forever. He's not saying, if you believe in me, I'm going to resuscitate your corpse. He's saying, do you believe that there is a life that is stronger than death? And she said, yes, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, coming back into the world. And she runs, she told Mary, Jesus is coming, and Mary comes running from the house, and Jesus, as he's getting in the house, Mary comes out, and she's first thing she says to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. She's also feeling betrayed by him. She's feeling like he let her down. Why didn't you show up? And when Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved, right? And that greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved does not communicate. Like the Greek is very, this is a gut-wrenching, just agony, and he's pissed. That he is. There's a sense of anger in it. He is just, like, it's just, you know, this thing that he just, you know, he's in it. And he says, where have you laid him? And they said to him, Lord, come and see. And he goes and he sees. And the text says, then Jesus began to weep. Jesus wept. His gut-wrenching anger turns into this profound sorrow, which is striking. Right? That his response to the suffering that is there, his response to the mourning of Mary and her friends and this community of people that he loves, and he's struck by what's happening for them, and he feels it at the core of his being. Right? It's this despair as if his own bones are dried up at that point, right? And then again, Jesus was greatly disturbed, and then the anger comes back upon him again. And he says, take away the stone. Take away this thing that is blocking him, that is keeping him entombed in death. And the people say, Lord, there will be a stench. The King James says, Lord, it will stinketh. Because he's been dead for 4 days. The smell of death will be there. And Jesus says, I will enter into the smell of death. I will enter into the stench. And he says, Lazarus, come out. And then Lazarus comes out and he's bound. Like he's tied up by these strips of cloth. His face is masked. And Jesus says, unbind him and let him go. And that's the point of the story. That he is set free. Right? That he's released from death. He's released from the things that have, from his illness. He's released from his sleepiness, his somnolence. He's released from the death and he's given life and he's freed to actually be alive. That's what the story is about. And it's about that this is the character of God, right? This is the kind of God we believe in, that God actually does take death and rework it and make it life again. That's what the Ezekiel story is about. It's not about raising corpses. It's about taking those things that do bind us, that hinder us, that impede us, that keep us from living and giving us life. Amen. That's true.